Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Remember to check out those swinging sounds. Oh, we got to get Gary, get my son's podcast music in here. What is his website? Check it out for me. It's podcast music? Is that what he calls
it? DrDrew.com/podcast music.
Podcast music. He's a composer and getting some really interesting stuff going. So please support him. Support the people that support the podcast. Click through on the Amazon banner. Do all that good stuff. And we can keep doing these things. We appreciate it very much. Philip Stutz, welcome.
Thank you.
The book is called Fire Them Now, The 7 Lies Digital Marketers Sell and the Truth About Political Strategies That Help Businesses Win. It's at Amazon. You can follow Philip at Philip Stutz, S-T-U-T-T-S, Philip with two L's, philipstutz.com. So I'm fascinated. So you have a medical story and a business story, right?
The medical story led to the business story.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Talk to me.
Well, I mean, I was diagnosed with achalasia in 2012, which is an esophageal disease.
Call it achalasia the cardia back when I was in training.
That's right.
And we used to, back when endoscopies were not that common, we used to diagnose it with these barium swallows. Oh. And you would just see, I'm sure you had your share. But I'd be back, now that I'm thinking about it.
I'm a lot.
But I'm going to tell you what I've been involved with. I'm sure you've had this, you're going to freak out. But we used to, you know, used to see these barium swallows where you see the, I'm going to try to describe it to listeners, which is the esophagus. Obviously, you're swallowing. You swallow this barium, and it just attenuates down to this little trickle at the end going into the stomach. And I was involved in – they don't always do this with achalasia, but sometimes they will do esophageal – I forget what they call it. The stretch, the esophagus, the name for it. I've seen 3 different versions done. Some of them are gruesome. I've seen people sort of semi-awake with it.
Yeah.
And they used to do it with these graduated rubber hoses essentially that are increasing diameter.
Of course.
And then they came up with these wires that they'd force these metal balls down of increasing diameter. You had all that?
I've had all that.
So just terrible.
I've had
it's terrible.
15 endoscopies and 3 major surgeries on it.
Oh, so they actually tried to repair it.
Well, yeah, so we'll get into that. But I mean, so I've worked in politics since 1996 and run political campaigns and have a political marketing company. And really, I'll give the genesis of the book and then we can jump into the medical. But the genesis of the book is from 2012 to 2017, I had this incurable.
It's genetic, as I recall.
No.
Or congenital,
they
whatever.
They don't know what it is.
They don't know what it is, right.
And
right.
I'll tell you my theory in a second. But I have had it for 5 years and I did nothing about it.
So one feature is sort of a scarring around the base of the esophagus, right? And do you think that happens from reflux or some sort of chronic inflammation?
Yeah.
Is that your theory?
For me, the thing is everybody that has this disease has a different sort of nuance to it.
Yeah.
And so mine is completely different than almost everybody I've talked to that's had it. Right. But I didn't do anything about it for 5 years.
It's different than just esophageal stricturing though, right? It's something – because stricturing is really from scarring down. Achalasia is just sort of a – I think it's a neuromuscular thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's no muscles and nerves in my esophagus.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't do anything about it. So I went to a business conference in 2017 with Peter Diamandis, who's the guy that started the XPRIZE and all this stuff. And he kept saying, everybody in the audience, you should write down and take down what you think your moonshot in your life will be. And so everybody's writing how they want to grow their businesses and all that. And I just thought, you know what? I think my moonshot is that I'm going to try to find a cure for this disease in 5 years. I had no idea how to do that. And what I realized in saying that, Drew, was that for 5 years I had my head in the sand and I did nothing about my
health.
Probably
in denial about it. Yeah.
And I was being treated at the Mayo Clinic and all this stuff. And at the same time, I'm seeing businesses and business owners all over the country that are frantic and paralyzed by the coming disruption of the economy. And in a weird way, I said, ooh, my disease is a big disruption, and there's a bigger disruption coming because the Mayo Clinic doctors have told me I'll have a feeding tube in about 10 years. And I was doing nothing about it. And so it really was the genesis of trying to write the book, and then we can talk about the medical condition now. But the genesis of the book was I wanted to help business owners break out of the stagnation that they've been in forever and ever. And frankly, about working in politics, we just have different standards, a better standard in the way we look at running campaigns. And I wanted to help businesses. So then
two things you said I want to clarify. So they've been stagnant. Are you saying generally businesses in America have been stagnant, or a business that is stagnant, you want to help them out?
No, business owners are totally stagnant in the fact that this is a disruptive economy.
Right now.
That everything is being disrupted right now. Right. And they don't know what to do.
Okay, you said the coming disruption.
Yes.
Is that then coming, or is there still some more coming down our – down for us?
I think we're in the most transformative time in the history of our country for our economy.
Yeah.
And we're in the first stages of it.
Yeah.
And I think every job and every industry will be massively disrupted.
I can tell you medicine is just – it's on the verge of some kind of major change.
Major.
Because it's become – the only word I have is disgusting. It's just – what I see happening, I'm disgusted by.
But there are so many people in Silicon Valley and other places around
the
country
that
are
– yeah, but –
Not in the way you're thinking. I'm thinking that they're trying to bring AI into the process. They're trying to give people more options. And I think you've seen it, so I'm interested what you see.
I just think they've got to find efficiencies into it. And there's so many ways to create efficiencies
you're right.
You know, that if they just take the encumbrances out, the thing will start to work again.
Right.
And then maybe you'll find some creative ways of expressing it as well. But, you know, just tort reform and things like that, and let doctors – I've always just said, if you just let a physician say, it was my judgment, and that's a defense in a malpractice case, $6 billion will drop out of the system immediately.
Yep.
As opposed to, well, I have to order this CAT scan. I have to order the – blah, 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 blah. So anyway, but
– Well, I've kind of gone through that.
Yeah.
It's a good transition.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because for 18 months, no one could diagnose what I had, and I literally –
What were you presenting with?
What were doctors telling me?
No, what were you experiencing?
I just started – I couldn't swallow properly. Oh, I was trying to eat food and it couldn't go down. And so, like I said, the nerves and muscles do not work. So anything I eat has to be – you know, there has to be a lot of liquid that goes down.
There are viruses that can do this, right?
I'm convinced it's autoimmune.
Or whatever.
Well,
I'm convinced I had an incredibly unhealthy gut. Yeah.
And it attacked itself.
Yeah.
And so I've had the Heller myotomy. This is a specific surgery where they've gone in and they've – I had two arthroscopic surgeries where they went in and sliced my esophagus to try to give me relief. Those didn't work. Those failed. And then the last one I had
– myotomy or myomectomy?
No, I had – it was called a POEM, P-O-E-M. Yeah. And then the last one I had was the Heller myotomy. And what they basically did was pull the esophagus straight, cut 25% of my stomach, wrapped it around the esophagus, stapled me all together.
Boy.
And that wrap will come undone.
Yeah.
And then I've only really got one more shot after that.
Did it work?
It has given me stability for the first time. But that didn't solve the core problem. And so when I made this moonshot, I said, well, first of all, I got to figure out the core problem. And so I went in and got every test done possible, blood tests, poop tests, urine tests, everything I could imagine. And the doctors came out and were like, oh, my God, your gut is horrible. Like you're in – I mean, look at me. I'm very skinny, right? So you know, maybe it's called skinny fat or whatever. But I was just really unhealthy and I didn't know it because I have a fast metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
And certain foods that you're going to be able to eat – all the steak you're eating right now.
Right.
I just can't eat that.
I bet.
And my gut can't handle it. So I found out there were a lot of foods I was not tolerant to, like dairy and, you know, corn and soy.
Did you have celiac?
No.
Something like
No. But I ate dairy every day of my life. And I didn't know what was going on,
yeah.
You know? So, I read a book, and I'm curious if you've read this book called The Plant Paradox by
– I just heard about it.
Dr. Gundry.
Yeah, it just hit the press recently.
He's treating me now.
I'm fascinated by that idea.
He saved my life.
Describe what that is. It's an amazing –
So basically he is saying you have to cut out lectins in your diet.
Yeah. So it's tomatoes and
– all right. So here's the list because if I tried to come off the top of my head.
Let's get a further sort of a 30,000-foot view, which is he's saying plants are screwing with our immune system.
Certain plants.
I understand.
Yes.
But we are so plant enthusiastic. You know what I mean? We are, right? And I've been my whole life. I thought that's the way – dark green vegetables, whatever. Tomatoes. I love tomatoes. He's saying – that he has evidence, and it's evidence-based. This is not just some sort of screwball. Ooh. This guy's a real deal.
Yeah.
That there is a at least for some people, if not for all, a basis to remove a big chunk of plants from our diet.
It's not just plants.
It's lectins.
It's lectins. Yeah. And so that includes, you know, sugars, fats, dairy, soy, potatoes, corn, white flour, and healthy foods that you think. All wheat, flours, grains, even a lot of nuts, nightshade vegetables.
What kind of nuts?
Cashews and peanuts.
This is the one. Those are the only two I've.
That's all I've eaten my whole
those
life.
Those are the only two I've kept in my diet. And it's funny when I added them in to my little carnivore diet.
Yeah,
I wasn't as happy.
Yeah, nightshade vegetables, all beans, and a lot of fruits.
A lot of fruit.
Well, because of the sugar content of the fruits.
So you're on my diet. It's essentially what I'm doing.
No.
And to keep it simple,
No.
Just because it's hard for me to
– I don't eat
I know
meat.
You can't eat the meats, but for me, just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Eggs and meat.
Totally. food is fuel for me. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not really made to be enjoyed anymore. And that's what it is.
How do you get the where do you eat?
So I eat – you can – I mean like spinach and leafy greens are totally great for you. And then avocados, nuts like walnuts and pecans and pistachios, totally fine. Cool. Listen, I've just, you know, my wife and I like work with cassava flour and almond flour and coconut flour. We just, you know, we just try everything different. The dairy part is really interesting because he makes the case for A1 casein is the problem.
And what does he think's happening? What's the theory?
That American cows have tons of poisonous lectins that are attacking people's guts.
And so by lectins, what are they doing? Are they activating the immune system?
Yeah, it's a protein. And boy, you're asking – I mean, you know, you should have him in. He's got –
Gary, let's do he's been in the news a lot lately.
Well, he has a new book, a cookbook out, and it's number three on New York Times bestseller.
Well, I just saw the headlines out of that. I'd heard of this kind of thing flying around for a while, and I thought this is
so
interesting.
Here's what he says on meats. It has to be grass-fed and finished. So that's well. Sometimes they're grass fed with some grains and some corn, soy, and you. Just, if it's finished, that means that's all they ate.
Got it.
And that you should limit it to 4 ounces of meat a day.
Oh.
And so here's the deal. So I went on this diet first to get my gut healthy. I took all these blood tests, poop tests, urine tests. I took them all before I went on the diet. I went on hardcore for 1 month or 5 weeks. When I came back, every gut test came back and everything on me had reduced.
Did you feel better?
I felt better.
Did you anything brain?
Yes. It was the first time in 5 years I am no longer on PPIs, which are proton pump inhibitors, which are the acid reflux medication.
And you think that affected your cognition?
I don't know if it affected my cognition, but there are links to dementia long term. And I've been on, 80 milligrams a day for 5 years, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
And I am on it no longer.
Yeah.
I haven't had any acid reflux. When I'm on the diet, I have no acid reflux.
That's crazy.
It's gone.
And, it's interesting.
And, you know, doctors have prescribed opioids and all this stuff.
Geez.
And like, right. I don't do it. But what I'm saying is like the Mayo Clinic, their mission, you think, my God, the Mayo Clinic is the best hospital in the world. But they see 100 patients a day, the one doctor that I go to.
Yeah.
So his thing is he goes, look, your disease is what it is. He pats me on the back, gives me prescriptions, and sends me on my way at the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just had to I had to think of myself, well, I've got to disrupt this.
Yeah.
So that was step one was I got to get healthy first. And then the second was how do I cure an incurable disease or how to figure out a cure? And so now that – I mean I'll – turn it back over to you, but like that, on that path now.
So what I would say is a way of just so we don't, you know, become overly enthusiastic with this. This doctor, what's his name again? I forget.
Dr. Stephen Gundry.
Gundry has evidence that the immune system is activated in the gut by these lectins. This theory has been flying around for a little while. It's growing and increasingly it's getting more and more accepted. There may be like, you know, Adam Carolla has a gut made of steel. Yeah. It probably is not
for
him.
Yes.
Yeah, he's probably not his deal.
Right.
So we all have our genetic variants of this, and maybe it has something to do with our diet as we're developing. But, you know, you obviously had a very severe variant. I've got my own little weird variant of it that I'm experimenting with now. And for some people, it's going to be about optimizing how they look 100%. And feel and stuff. For other people, it may be medically relevant.
Everybody has a different gut. I mean,
it's like some people get celiac disease.
That's right.
You have something that we don't fully understand yet, and I would argue that what you had is a neuromuscular attack on the neuromuscular system of your esophagus, which is outside your esophagus. It's not even in your gut. It's the layer behind your gut, essentially. I mean, the esophagus is all kind of a muscle and a nerve. And why it should have attacked that and not your nerves in your leg or something, I don't know. Who knows? But just the fact that it's an impressive story, even though their big piece is missing still. Right. Yeah.
So anyway, that was the step one. And then step two was I got to find a way to cure it. And so I wrote an article in Inc. magazine a year ago, and a researcher saw the article, contacted me through my own company. I mean, she just emailed the general email account of my company. Said, what are you talking about?
What is this?
Yeah, I've had it for 20 years.
Oh, she had achalasia too.
She does. She's a researcher. She started a nonprofit, like one of the achalasia nonprofit or awareness organizations. So I said, well, I'm gonna find a cure for this. And she's like, how? And I said, well, I don't. I mean, I said, I feel like there's an opportunity in stem cells. Like, there's no research. There was some stem cell treatment that I had found by Googling around, but it was done in the early 2000s. Not on anybody.
On achalasia.
They hadn't treated anybody. It was basically doctors thought that could be a hope.
Okay.
And then it died. I mean, like, I saw nothing else forever and ever. So I said, I don't know. I think it could be. And I taught to all these stem cell clinics overseas, and they were all like, oh, sign up. Give us $30,000. We'd love to have you. And I went, oh, that didn't sound good. And she said, well, let me call around to some doctors. So she calls around. And she comes back to me a week later, and she says, well, actually, I found one doctor who's been working on achalasia for basically 20 years, and he believes that stem cells could be a way to regenerate the nerves and the muscles in the esophagus.
He's at Johns Hopkins. Let me just put out my bias on this.
Tell me.
I am an advocate for stem cell.
Yeah.
But I think in my – as I've seen it used, who's that cardiologist I did the Stem Hills podcast with, Gary? Can you find that one? Every time I talk to people who do stem cells, and I've talked to a lot of them, what you hear is, and this is without exception, what you're actually seeing is profound anti-inflammatory effects of the stem cells, that they somehow have anti-inflammatory mediators. Right. What I've never seen is stem cells going in and replacing and rebuilding cells that are not there where they should be. That's what I've never seen. I mean, it can't happen, or that we can't figure out how to do it. But what I've seen always is this anti-inflammatory property. Mm-hmm. Now, in your case, you may still have some anti-inflammatory – some inflammation left behind that's – could be reversed. You know what I mean?
Fair. That is one of the things that they've told me. And you're 100% right, and I understand all that.
Yeah.
We found – so this doctor at Johns Hopkins
– because the conceit is, oh, I'll put cells in. They'll just go replace. So you get a new heart to get a new brain. Okay. And it just does – I mean –
it's true.
It could work like that one day. It does not work like that now.
Correct.
Yeah.
So he put a team around me at Hopkins, and we brought in a couple other doctors, and – basically, I'm about to start a one-man clinical trial at Hopkins.
You'll get better. You will get better.
Well, and
it will help you, right? Because
they're going to extract calf muscle, culture it.
Oh, I like it.
Grow.
Ooh, that's different. Hang on a second. What number was that?
I believe it was 318. Dr. Ernest von Schwartz.
Yes, it was von Schwartz. Exactly. So this is a little different than stem cell. Hmm. This is actually they're going to try to graft replacement muscle onto your esophagus.
True.
That's different. There may be some stem cell treatment involved in it, but
it's a one-man clinical trial. And I said, what do you think? And he said, I don't know. It's never been done before. And I'm like, anything bad? And he's like,
how are they going to put the muscle in?
Not really.
How are they going to put it in?
Well, it's the stem cells.
They're going to take calf muscle. They're going to grow muscle.
Culture. No, they're going to take the stem cells out of my calf muscle.
Muscle stem cells.
Yes.
And they're going to inject them into your esophagus,
and then they'll culture them at a lab in Pennsylvania, and then they're going to do small insertions.
There's 1,000 questions there because
you can ask me. I probably don't have the answers. So we're waiting for the IRB, their independent review board, to approve it.
I think you will have something. Something will happen. But here's the deal. That's skeletal muscle down there. The bottom part where achalasia is most problematic is there's some smooth muscle down there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to improve your skeletal muscle, which will give you better propulsion into the smooth muscle. But maybe they've cut off all the smooth muscle from that operation.
I think one of the concerns is that I've had too many surgeries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've just had too much damage.
There's another really interesting piece in here too that I don't know how to frame it, which is our autonomic nervous system. Mm-hmm. Is it's as complicated as the brain, and we've just ignored it forever. And what controls your esophagus is some skeletal, some volitional, and some autonomic. Mm-hmm. And that fascinates. There's something in that. That's the organ that got attacked. That it's.
I don't know why. I mean, I just consider that I had an unhealthy gut and I ate.
All I can tell you is when you really find out what's going on, it's not a narrative.
Right.
You're making a nice little story out of it now, and that's what we have to do to kind of begin to understand things.
Sure.
But when you really figure out the biology, it's just things flying all different directions and probability equations sort of act out in this boom, and this one thing happens. But it's you're onto something, man. It's fascinating. You are disrupting. That's good for you. You've done it.
If I had to think about it and sat down with my family and said, do we really want to do this and be the
sort of – Well, you may move the field forward.
That's it.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, I'll figure out a plan B. In fact, plan B is probably – there's a doctor out of Wake Forest University named Tony Atala. Have you heard of Tony? Mm-hmm. He's about growing 3D printing appendages.
Jesus.
And I've had calls with him. Mm. He's got a great TED talk on YouTube.
Is he a plastic surgeon?
No.
Because I've talked to a plastic surgeon that does 3D printing stuff.
No,
he's a director of the Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
Oh, cool.
And chair of urology.
Urology. He's a urologist. Be careful. I'm just saying the training is not what I would want for somebody to do.
He's not doing it. He's 10, 20 years down the road that.
But
he also was part of the team that met with my doctor at Hopkins. And he had a lot of concerns initially.
I think he's the guy that's trying to make a kidney, right?
Is yes, that
guy?
That's right. Yeah, that's him. Yeah, that's him.
That's different than what you're dealing with. But good.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's stuff out there that's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I, regardless, if I can just keep my esophagus and don't
worried about the unraveling for later. I see.
Yeah.
I just think you ask them if they can also do something with sort of pluripotent stem cells, not just with
like, is that cells. The fat?
Just something because that has a real effect that those more sort of indiscriminate stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm fascinated, but I'm so glad you're doing it because you're not just doing it for yourself. You're doing it for a lot of other people.
Well, we'll see. I mean,
you are.
This is a rare disease. So it's like 1 out of 100,000. And most of the people are in their 60s and 70s. And I'm in my 40s and was diagnosed in my 30s. But I mean,
did you have any gastroparesis also? Was your stomach motility down as well as esophagus?
I have motility issues, but not in my stomach.
It's all in the esophagus. Okay. So I want to hear more about your business then. So this went from medical to business? Or business to medical?
Well, no, I felt this paralysis within my own work for so long. Within my own disease for so long. And so then I just, when I decided I wanted to disrupt my disease and I started making progress. And frankly, it's this. Doctor, you're 100% right. I have to listen to doctors. It's not that at all. But the medical community is so frightened by anything.
Ossified.
Because of like you just said,
liability.
Because of the lawsuit issues, that they literally just want to pat you on the head and give you medicine and send you on your way. And there's that's not a blame because they have to see 100 people a day or whatever.
It's not even that is one of the problems.
Sure.
Is the amount of people we got to mill through. But all we can do is all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
In that we're trained a certain way. There's a little bit of a cultish kind of thinking. We're very much in our narrow zone of thinking about things, and they're not uncomplicated. They're very complicated thinking based on good evidence, proper science done properly. But we're sort of not allowed to step outside of that because of the legal implications and the ethical / privacy / everything. We're just not allowed to step out of the corridors we're in. And so, it makes for a very uncreative kind of an environment, ossified environment.
I mean, the quote they gave me when I said, well, why can't there be a cure? And they said, Philip, it is what it is. You need to just accept it. And that's where I finally went. I've got to figure something out because I've done that in my business. And, I come from the world of politics where we run political campaigns and we go 100 miles an hour and we're constantly innovating and trying to get people elected. And it's
is it possible you blew a fuse neurobiologically from all the stress of running campaigns?
There may be that there was just a lot of internal stress in my makeup and my mind.
Well, that's again, this autonomic nervous system stuff I'm thinking about. I wonder if it just sort of.
Yeah. It's not that way now. I mean, I meditate now and I don't really live in fear anymore because I really don't care. And that amount of stress wiped off of me in the last 2 years has been amazing.
So when you look back at that, do you see that as toxic?
Totally.
So,
absolutely, 100%. I think that's part of it.
Yeah,
was the amount of stress internally.
Yeah,
and fear.
Hmm.
And I think again, I just resonate with what a lot of people are going through right now in different sides, whether it's business or in life or anything, because I've lived like that for so long.
So talk to me a little more now about the disruption of business generally. You're saying we're in the middle of this huge disruption. Clearly, there's a disruptor in the White House. Clearly, there's lots of stuff being disrupted everywhere and. Personally, I glory in it. I'm like, because we've been, I wish
I
my profession would disrupt a little more. You're a disruptor. That's why I'm so happy you're doing it.
I mean, clearly, I'm not here to talk about Donald, Javanka, where they went to dinner, what he said and tweeted about. I don't care about that. So I want to make sure your audience knows I'm not here to like sit here and talk about policy
issues. I'm interested.
What I want to talk about is how it works.
I'm interested that somebody thought they could denuclearize North Korea. Now it's happening.
Absolutely.
Somebody had to think that was possible.
It's not that they had to think it was possible. It's that somebody came in and said – he didn't – the thing about Trump is Trump's been criticized so much for not following what everybody has always done forever.
Yeah.
And where has that gotten us? And he's not thinking, I need to do it differently. He's just being himself.
He's just doing whatever.
Yeah.
So how does the average person that doesn't have that kind of personality, let's say, and is interested in not being, like him, interested? I'd rather be more like Barack Obama as a person, but I'd rather be a disruptor like him at the same time. Can you do both is
of
my
course
question.
You can. Yeah. Both. I mean, obviously, Trump is a unique individual that's – and you probably look at the psychology and understand it better than
I understand
do.
And I look at it going, well, they sent him in to be a disruptor. They sent it a murder weapon and they got it and it's
– the American voters said, we want the Molotov cocktail.
That's right. They
you guys have done this in D.C. to us for too damn long.
Yep.
You promise.
I wish somebody would throw that into California. Promise. That's maybe the breaking in California to 3 or something because we need major, major disruption.
So you're seeing that in politics, but you're also seeing it in business.
Where?
Let's take the most basic, simple example, and I've talked about this a lot, but it's, we'll talk about automated cars, right?
Yeah.
We know that's coming. I have a 5-year-old daughter. She'll never drive and all that stuff. That's not the disruption I'm talking about. The disruption I'm talking about is the second and third order consequences of something like that. So what happens to governments that can't fund don't have parking tickets anymore or speeding tickets are not issued anymore? Where does that funding come from? How do they collect money and taxes? How do emergency care workers, right, nurses in hospitals, what happened? How many of them are going to be cut when we have 38,000 less car deaths a year?
Mm.
Organ donors. What is going to happen to people on organ donor lists when there are no more – basically traffic accidents will be – close to being eliminated from what they are right now, right? And so there are – I mean, I could go on and on. Another example is as crazy as it sounds. 19% of greenhouse gases comes from land animals.
Yeah.
People in Silicon Valley have figured out how to 3D print meat, how to take the cells from cows and print a steak that tastes unbelievable. You go to YouTube and Google it up. You can look at it. When they are able to eliminate – let's say 75% of land animals, we cut greenhouse gases. But what happens to farmers?
Right.
What happens to grocery stores? They're undergoing the disruption with Amazon that's going to eliminate grocery store workers. So, I mean, like everything, single thing. Look at the insurance industry to be completely disrupted.
I know a lot of people look at that with trepidation. I look at those kinds of stories with no more trepidation than I would – look at anybody talking about a carriage manufacturer in 1920 or a livery service in 1910. It's like, you were good. We needed you. We ain't going to need you in 10 years. Figure it out.
And we'll
figure it out.
And we will.
Figure it out. That's it. And so I feel like it is that kind of a shift. Like it feels like when the automobile hit, it feels like that kind of a, but it's happening in multiple areas, right?
Right.
It's not just transportation.
It's our friend at Quip. It's an electric toothbrush that is a fraction of the cost of the bulkier brushes while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help you clean your teeth. It's got a built-in timer, so it helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes. I really rely on that because otherwise I would stop too soon. And of course, Quip's subscription plan are available for your health. It's not just for convenience. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping, and that is worldwide. Comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror, unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel wherever you're taking your teeth. And finally, everyone loves it. They were on the Oprah's O-List, named one of Time's Best Inventions, and is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. And they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com, that's getquip.com/Drew. Right now, you'll get your first refill free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That is your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/Drew. Again, getquip.com/Drew. True car. Now, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You don't even know what that means, right? Invoice, list price, dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. Well, now, if you're looking for what the price actually is, True Car has true price. You'll know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. And, of course, that's before you get to the dealership, so you enjoy a faster, easier buying experience. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars precisely like the one you want, and it's all from the comfort of your home. How do you know if your true price is a great price? Well, it's because True Car shows you what other people paid. See that scattergram, and you lock in a price, and you're locking in a price for a vehicle on the True Car certified dealer's lot. And the True Car certified dealers know that you are shopping, so they set their prices, the true price, they set it competitively so they will win your business. So when you're ready to buy new or used, that's right, they have used cars as well as new cars, go to True Car and you'll enjoy a more confident car buy experience. Some features not available in all states. Zoom, everybody. Video conferencing has changed the way we do business. Fewer long-distance trips. Zoom, and Zoom is so good. Don't use the other guys. I'm not kidding you. Zoom is HD video. It is striking. First time you see 25 faces all at once live on the screen, that will change your opinion. And with Zoom, you can share anything else you want with anybody on any device, a Word file, a spreadsheet, a presentation deck. It does everything. It's really, this is it now. Zoom has finally got this right. You can do anything you always wanted in a video communication with some amazing features you never even thought of. You can even set up a green screen behind you and make a backdrop of, say, your client's logo or something like that. You can be in some exotic location. But if you already use Zoom, as I do, you know what I'm talking about. Meet happy with Zoom video communications. You will be happy with this. I kid you not. Video conferencing, this particular form of video conferencing with Zoom, it's reliable. It is easy. You won't be unhappy. I promise. We use it all the time. Set up your free account today at zoom.us, zoom.us. Step into the walk-in with celebrity chef Richard Blaze podcast, Starving for Attention, every Tuesday on Podcast One. Serving up great interviews with Curtis Stone, Thug Kitchen, Andrew Zimmern, and more. Download Starving for Attention with Richard Blaze at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also, don't forget to rate and review.
Speaking of transportation, though, we got to get in the air. Please give me a drone that can fly.
That's
in or
right.
Something.
Well,
please.
That's coming. It's funny that has been in the works for like 10 years.
And please, I beg you, I'll be
the first.
They're
about 10 years away from it.
But to be fair, I may be an organ donor as a result because here comes some accidents in it from a different place. You know what I'm saying? We may not get it from car accidents anymore, but it's going to be me and my drone now. Now I'm going to be an organ donor. You know what I'm saying? You got rid of all the car accidents, but we'll still have opiate addiction and drones flying around. So there'll be plenty of organs.
No, here's what they've got. I mean, I've seen this because I've been in Silicon Valley so much. First of all, they have all the AI technology that can make sure nobody touches each other.
That's good.
There will be no more speed limits when we go to automated cars. There will be no more stop signs because the cars will be able to sense it. They'll be able to sense when to speed up and when to slow down because another car is coming from 3 miles ahead.
Yeah.
All of those things will be gone. Now, it'll happen gradually, so it's not like a big smack in the face. But the fact is, and like what happens to the car insurance industry when there are no more accidents. It's over. The one industry that will do really well is life insurance because we're all going to live a lot longer in the future, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there are all these different orders of consequences that are going on. And what I found, and I talked to 100 CEOs for the book, and they said the one thing they can't wrap their arms around is sort of the digital media. And like they used to be able to throw up a TV ad.
Yeah.
And they got tons of customers, or they, you know, there are so many different advertising platforms that used to be easy. It was a one-stop shop. And now you have to go in front of 20, 30 different platforms in order to get your message out.
Yes, you have to exist
and
everywhere.
So then they put their head in the sand, these business owners, and their businesses are not innovating. They're not growing. And the disruption is coming and they're not doing anything. So I decided to write the book to say, here's how we do things in politics as a different mechanism for them to think. And the fact is that when my company applied political principles to businesses, we grew those businesses. Because here's the deal. We are moving into a customer is in charge economy. That's what we are in right now.
Customers in charge.
Yes.
Is that different than it has been?
Absolutely. If you bought a car 10 years ago, the dealership was in charge. Now you have True Cars, right?
Yeah.
Uber is now – like if an Uber driver – yesterday I was in New York. An Uber driver almost killed me. I rate him. I'm in charge now of that business.
Okay.
Yelp. What has Yelp done to businesses, both, I mean, good and bad, right?
Yeah.
The customer is in charge.
Okay.
And so many – businesses out there are not sensing that. They think they have a really good product, they have a great service, but they're not figuring out what the customer wants. Mm. But in politics, all we think about is what the voter wants.
Yeah.
That's the only way we design our campaigns.
So what do people want going forward?
Well, what do you mean? And that's a very broad question.
It's a very broad question. Intentionally, I want to just see how you answered it.
What do people want going forward?
In other words, I'm trying to create a business that is going to respond to the voter, so to speak.
You go to where they're not. And what I mean by that is people want connection.
That's a very big topic. And correct. I agree with you because we've
and
been
disconnected. And if you go to them in multiple platforms, both traditional and digital media, but if you can also figure out a way to tap into their emotion. And what we do in politics is we go door to door, knock on doors. The candidates go door to door. We set up phone banks. We do those sorts of things. If you can figure out in your own business – how you can tap into a personalized communication with a person and tell them that what you have is meeting their needs, then you've found the secret sauce. And so I think it's infinitely harder to get someone to vote for an unsavory or unknown candidate running for office than it is to get somebody to buy a tube of toothpaste.
That makes sense to me.
And so when we applied the way we innovate and have to constantly think about the voter, we applied that to businesses, we saw these businesses explode and grow.
Do you have an example? So we can sort of
I have a great example. So,
and this is all in the book?
Yeah. So I have a friend of mine, and this it all started by accident. So a few years ago, a guy owns a huge real estate development company in Hawaii. And he said, I'm kind of fascinated by how you guys do things in market and politics. You think it could help my business? And I said, let's go try. He had spent a huge budget ad campaign to try to get people to buy houses in this development where he was building along the coast in Hawaii. And he had no leads out of a high five-figure budget. Or he had one lead. So we came in there. He gave us 25% of that total budget. And we went in there and used the way we target voters, and we went in and targeted certain segments, found out people that would be interested in those kind of homes, found out geographically. Like the old marketing firm was putting stuff in the Wall Street Journal for East Coast people to see that there's houses in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And we were targeting people in Arizona and California and military bases around Hawaii and all this. And all of a sudden, we ended up having like a 700% increase in the leads for their sales just because we applied political principles to what we were doing.
So if I just understand what you're saying, it's pick the right market, pick the right customer?
No, it's understanding the customer.
Understand the right customer.
And we have a process that we go through. Huh. It's like we do with voters. We do research on them. We take polling. We understand what they need, what they like. We do the same thing with businesses. And then we take the data and then design models around it and then know. So I know what that customer, that voter wants. And then I deliver the message of what they're interested in, how that product serves them or how that service serves them.
Now, you said a few minutes ago, you said connect to them emotionally or stir their emotions.
Right.
That doesn't sound like a very emotionally based process.
Well, I'll give you a great one.
Yeah.
The most emotional campaigns we do in politics are negative ad advertising.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you like those negative ads when you see them?
No.
No. Does anybody like them?
No.
You know why we do them?
Because they work.
They work.
Yeah.
Right. And so what I encourage businesses to do is to take negative ad strategies and apply them to their business. Huh. Now, you may think that that doesn't make sense. Why would you do that? You're going to offend customers and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about.
Has it always been that way, or is that a relatively new phenomenon the last 30 or 40 years, the negative response?
Well, so it's not negative. It's not like clubbing someone over the head like we like to do in politics, yeah. Right? It is – do you remember Apple versus PC ad? The nerdy PC guy and the real cool hipster Apple.
With Justin Long.
Yep, that's right.
I really don't remember the Apple ad I remember is the one – where it was like 1984 and that big guy.
That was the most famous ad, right.
You know, that's the,
well, Apple
that's
and,
about
and,
disrupting, you right. know, right? And that's emotional.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, this one was, it was basically a nerdy guy that represented the PC computer yeah. and then the hipster guy that represented the Apple computer or yeah. the Mac. It was Mac versus PC was the yeah. ad campaign. And they did not run any that you know the Mac guy never said anything negative about the PC guy. He just like let him dig his own grave and yeah. made him into a nerd,
yeah.
you know, and it was nothing was offensive about it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a tactical one that's been recently like McDonald's put out a tweet recently and the tweet said insert copy here, like their marketing person screwed up and you know put yes. out this tweet that yes. basically they forgot to put the copy in, right?
Yes.
And Wendy's responded and said, you know, hey, McDonald's, your tweets are broken like your ice cream machine. And that's funny, one. Two, no one's offended. Three, it got tons of plague, tons of stories, advertising
out
of it.
Who won on that one? Wendy's or McDonald's?
Wendy's.
Wendy's wins.
Because
okay.
they went after them.
Okay,
but they did it in a humorous way. They didn't offend anybody.
So humor. There's one positive.
Humor is absolutely okay. one of the
so,
biggest
so
aspects.
Good.
And so you bring out emotion that way.
Yeah,
by
yeah.
using humor in a you know, and again, you can collaborate with a competitor and do these things, and you're going to get stories written about it. You're going to get free media. You're going to get all these things.
And then there's so you're really sort of in the persuasion zone, which is sort of Scott Adams and all that stuff. And who's the power of positive thinking? Help me with that. Look that book up. Do you feel with Scott Adams and all his
no.
stuff? He sounds a lot like you in a sort of a different discipline, which is persuasion, language persuasion as much as anything. Power of positive thinking.
Norman Vincent Peale.
Yep.
And using, you know, catchwords and language that evoke emotion rather than anything worried about facts or
right.
yeah, just get emotion going and tag people and other products with sort of names that are sticky and evoke an image that you can't ever get away from again.
Sure. I mean, that's all politics is.
Well, like he looks at what Trump did with Crooked Hillary. He goes,
right.
perfect.
Or low energy Jeb. I mean, he crushed.
Right? And now we've got, he caught Comey something the other day. I was like, oh, there it goes. That's going to be right. called slippery or slimy Comey or something. Oh, there it is. That's.
But he gets it. Trump does.
Instinctively, he gets that.
He gets it instinctively.
So what is somebody who – I don't get that. To me, that's all mysterious and bizarre to see them doing that and even think that it works to me is like, huh? That doesn't work on me.
Right.
I don't even believe that.
Slippery, by the way. It's
Slippery.
His fifth – I just found a great wiki of all the different nicknames he's used for all the different people. That's his fifth Comey nickname.
See, he's making a mistake. He should have just stuck with one.
Well, no, they must not have worked. He must have known
they're changing as – it's funny when you read – it starts with Leakin, then Sanctimonious, then Lion, Slimeball, and Slippery. So it's kind of as the stories are progressing, he's changing to adapt.
There you go.
And they have imagery. They have – you know, and they have emotion.
Right.
And
so I'll give you a good statistic.
Yeah.
There was a study done in 2014, 2016 elections, and basically they did a control group, and then they went out and did an experimental group. In the experimental group, they took voters that were registered to vote but never voted, right? In both cases, and in one of the experimental group, they went out and took those people, went door to door, knocked on the door, did a proactive message,
yeah.
Tried to get to know those voters, paid attention, figured out what they cared about, did polling on them, and then they went through this whole process. And the other one they didn't do anything with.
Yeah.
There was a 15% increase in voter turnout from the experimental group versus the control group. Now, if you're talking about 1 million voters, turning out 150,000 new voters that would typically not vote, that's a lot.
How do they explain that?
Emotion.
Just the personal connection.
The personal connection. Yeah. And here's a great example of a business that does that. Are you familiar with the clothing line Billy Reed?
No.
They're out of New York.
Yeah.
And my wife loves his clothes. And Billy Reed, my wife, for her birthday this year, she bought a bunch of clothes. And they sent them to her in a box. And in the box was a handwritten note.
Oh, yeah.
And she went, she's still talking about it 2 months later. And she's like, I'll buy from them because they care about me.
So the reason I'm plugging so hard into this and digging so hard into you is that I am interested in helping people change. I agree with everything you said about the disruption.
Sure.
But I feel like we're also on the cusp of some, I don't know, maybe a psychological shift or an interpersonal shift when I think there's a potential for more health ahead, interpersonally and maybe even collectively as a citizenship or something. And I'm just trying to figure out how I can help contribute to that or move that. And it's very – again, these are terribly broad, unfair questions to throw into your lap. But I feel like the kinds of things you're talking about can be very significant forces for good.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just interests me. And I'm trying to sort of understand where we can all apply
that. I think you can tell I'm passionate about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think it's for good. And I do think it can
– Is it only through politics and business? I mean, how else can it be applied, I guess, some of how I'm asking.
Well, I think –
How can we persuade and move and
I think it's to
educate?
The key to life is growth.
Yeah. It's funny. Kroll and I did a podcast today where we said exactly that.
It's personal.
But a lot of people don't grow, though.
No.
They don't.
But when they grow, they find purpose. And they find fulfillment. And
so is that just the message? You know, is that if we can get that planted, so to speak, in everybody, a message about growth, it's a pretty big deal.
It is.
Yeah.
So – I'll lay out how I do it practically. Good.
I apologize if I keep interrupting. I'm kind of fascinated by everything you're saying. So please.
Okay. So I carve out 2 hours a week to think about my marriage. I have to, because otherwise I'm reacting to my marriage. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about it, I think about how I want to light my wife up. I want to think about how I meet her needs. I want to think about what she's going through, and I try to work through all of that.
Is it meditative, or do you write it down?
Oh, no,
do you
have an
action plan?
I think, and then I'll Google, and I'll go in, I'll look stuff up, and I'm just trying. And my wife and I sit down and have a meeting every week, not just on tactical stuff that we need to get done.
Do you have kids?
We have one.
Yeah.
A little girl. And then we talk about what can we do to improve our own marriage. And so that has taken our relationship to another level. As you can tell from my story, I definitely think in a growth mentality with my disease. Mm-hmm. All of this is rooted in the fact that I'm in a business that if we don't win elections, we're dead. We're out of work. So I constantly have to think and grow and innovate and innovate and innovate. But it really is sort of in my DNA too. Mm-hmm. And
I'm not sure winning is a healthy thing, unfortunately. I know it's your business.
Right.
I have no alternative. But for the average person, I'm not sure that's a great
– What's competition?
Competition's good. Winning, you have to not care. You have to be interested in just growing.
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that you could. But so, yeah. I, whether it be my health, my business, or my personal relationship. Yeah. And I do the same thing with my daughter.
How old is she now?
She's 5. Hmm. And I just didn't – I mean, my parents are amazing. But they just grew up in a different time period.
Oh, wow.
They grew up in the 50s. And so there was – you know, the latchkey kid kind of thing. It's not like I was just left alone, but I've done more with my daughter in my life than they have. And that's not a knock. That's just what
different.
It is.
Just
I
different.
Am completely.
And you're spending all this time at Silicon Valley. Is some of this inspired by that?
I think all that blew my mind.
And are you still seeing it? You're still up there exposed to it?
Yeah.
What other, you've mentioned printing and other things. What else?
Oh, I just think this whole blockchain and cryptocurrency, which I took a 2-day class on, and I still have no idea what it is.
Are you invested in it?
No, Yeah. I can't invest in something I don't understand. Yeah. So, but it is,
wouldn't be investing. It'd be just,
yeah, right. It would be. Yeah. That's right. And so, but that's been a fascinating aspect of it. I think the housing market's going to be disrupted. I mean, I think
in what way?
Real estate agents. I mean, why do you need a real estate agent?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And why do you have? Why does it take 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 4 weeks to close on a house? Four weeks if you've got the money and the cash.
Here. In New York, you have to have an attorney and a whole
right.
procedure. It's crazy.
And there are people in Silicon Valley that are cutting that process down to like 5 days. And so, I mean, just everything. And so what, in my book, I wanted to serve. Like, that's important.
I get that.
And so we created an audit for free for anybody, and I'll give it to your listeners, but it's philipstutz.com/audit. And if you have a business, you can go in there and you put in all of your digital footprint, all your social media handles for your business, if you do email campaigns, your websites, all that stuff. And we will completely audit everything within 5 days, and then we'll send you a report and a scorecard. So you'll know what works, what you're doing wrong, what you're doing right, and it'll give you kind of the ammunition to make the change, improve what you're doing, or fire the marketing firm that you're currently working with.
And is there a further business for you there? Like, if we like what you...
If they do, but that's not the point of what I'm doing. I will tell you, we've done 100 of these. 95 of them did not engage with us, and we did not push engagement.
Afterwards.
If they really, really want to, we'll talk to them. But the point is, I want to give people the opportunity to get in the game. And that was what we created at the company. We funded the whole thing.
What's the company called?
My company is we have a corporate company and a political company. It was funny. We ran all of our political marketing, all the corporate marketing we did, we ran it through the political marketing firm. And then this company said, you know, we really don't want to be associated with your political network. And I went, I got that. Yeah. So we have a company called Win Big Media, and the political company is called Go Big Media.
And so if you go to Win Big Media, is there a similar audit there?
Yeah, it'll link back to the same one.
Win Big Media.
Winbigmedia.com.
And I'm thinking, you know, in terms of disruptive kinds of thinking, how you define what a business is got to be totally different too now. I mean, like, Adam's a business. I'm a business.
That's 100% right.
Right. So you may just be evaluating individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. Could.
Footprint in social
That's
media.
Right. And I could look and say, you know, the Corolla website's all over the place. The Corolla team does an amazing job on like Facebook and on socials and digital. I mean, yeah, but we'd go through that whole thing and we'd monitor it all. My team just does it. And it's been a blast too, because we learn about so many different businesses.
Huh.
And then you really can pinpoint, like, we'll give the report back and we do a conference call with them to kind of tell them what they need to do. And
this is for free?
Yeah.
This is the greatest bargain in the history
of
humanity.
But you'll be surprised. They're like, yeah, that's, you're 100% right. We need to do those things, but we're just not in that place. And it's like, all right, but here you go. We I did my part.
I'm
good.
This will work.
If they don't want to change, that's on them.
Is that they don't have the faith of experience that you do because you've done it in so many different contexts?
No, the example I will give is it's like political donations. Asking someone to write a check to a politician when they know they can't write that check off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm giving you, Drew, you know, this. Let's say you're a politician. I'm going to write you a $2,000 check, and I can't write that off. It's an unnatural act.
Yes.
And then asking these business owners, telling them, hey, you've got to make some investment dollars into, you know, let me break out.
Yeah.
We sat down with Google and Facebook almost on a weekly basis. 2 years ago, they came to me and said, you need to start hiring people that can do video production.
They said that to you?
2 years ago.
To you?
Yes.
So they were evaluating you at that point.
No, we were sitting and saying, where are you guys going to focus on in the future? And they said, y'all need to hire video production because everything's going to video, everything. And so I go, well, that's really not my business model yet. I was like, we were planning on hiring all these other people, but I said, okay. And so we went out and created this large video production team, graphic art creative team. sure enough, that is where everything is right now, is all video. And so when we go and do these audits, we'll find out people have websites and they have no video because the last time they updated their website was 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, look, you've got to get – and it's not just video. It's, you know, are you doing six-second video? Are you doing – is it formatted correctly? Because literally Facebook, if you don't format your videos on mobile a proper way, they will do nothing with it. No one will see it.
Hmm.
So you have to do all these little techniques that they are telling us you have to do. And then the business owner is like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. That's too complicated. I don't want to do that. Things are working fine right now. Right now.
Interesting. Really, I mean, it's so I hope you don't get overwhelmed with people calling you after this podcast.
No, that's the point. We're ready
still,
for it.
Like,
we've put this together. It was about a year ago. And
how many people in your company now?
We're at 21.
And where is it?
We have Washington, D.C., Florida, and Dallas, Texas.
And where's home for you?
So, it's interesting. I heard you say this the other day. You don't know why you live here anymore.
I really am. I've lived here my whole life, and I'm ready to leave.
So,
and so I just emotionally,
sure.
I feel like it's broken down. Like it's just broken down. Yeah. And I see I have two options. Get out of here. Or break the state up. That's about all. Because the people that they're clinging to their power are not going to correct it. They're going to just keep breaking it down. It's just really a horrible thing.
I get it. So I lived in Washington, D.C. for 17 years.
Yeah.
And the last few years we were there, we were paying – I always thought we paid the highest income tax. Y'all pay more here. But we were paying like close to 10% in city income tax. We were getting no services. We had terrible schools. Basically I was the enemy because I paid the most in taxes.
Welcome to California.
Right. And so, and we lived in a neighborhood. I couldn't send my newborn girl to school, to public school.
Welcome to California.
And I just said, they don't want me here.
Right.
They literally don't want me here.
It's the Laffer curve.
And so And so I said, we're getting out of here. So we moved to Florida, with no state income tax. My little girl will start public school kindergarten next year. That's a great public school.
Yeah. Tennessee, and then Nevada, Texas.
I have the choice to send her to private school if I want.
Sure.
We live at the beach. My quality of life, like no traffic anymore.
Are you trying to get me to leave today?
I'm telling you, it was the greatest decision we ever made. We live in a small town now. People were so nasty in Washington, D.C. just because the traffic and the parking and everybody, and just it just festers. And so now we live in a small town and we have great friends and we have no traffic. And
are you from the South?
Yeah.
Where?
I'm from Alabama.
Yeah. What part?
Birmingham.
It's a beautiful city.
It is. It's a great city. But we live in the Panhandle, in the Redneck Riviera.
Oh, yeah. So for the people around the country that don't know, the Panhandle is its own country.
Oh, yeah.
It's very different.
Sure. It's the northern part. It's the most southern part.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because it goes down below Georgia and Alabama.
That's right. So we're in a town called Seaside, Florida. It's an unbelievable little beach community. I mean, unbelievable.
Is that near Panama City?
Yeah. It's in between. Right. I forgot you used to go to Panama City.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's in between Destin and Panama City.
Yeah. And so Florida's like four states. It's Northern Florida, Central Florida, right. Southern Florida, and the Panhandle.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's totally.
And yet Florida functions, unlike California. We're like three states,
so
too, but we don't function.
But I commute everywhere, right? And I'm in planes all the time, stuff like that. But my wife and I work on it. We're communicating. We know, like, this is what it is. We get an opportunity to live in an incredible place. We're happy. You know, we run on, there's no more winters. That was the big thing for us, too.
Winters?
In Washington, D.C., we had winters.
Yeah.
And we don't have winters anymore, really. Yeah. And that's unbelievable.
Florida, people don't realize that, not the Panhandle so much, but Florida is more like California culturally than you'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It's familiar, I guess, because it's sort of newly settled kind of thing,
right.
I guess. I don't know. I just feel more – I feel at home in Florida.
You know what was the interesting side aspect for me, Dr. Drew, is it gave me time to think.
Being in Florida.
Yeah. I'm not in the hustle and bustle anymore. I'm not trying to get places anymore. When I'm home, I get into my office at 7 a.m. and I study and think, and I have time to think in clear head and a clear head.
Yeah.
And that's a game changer.
Yeah. I just insert my own personal stuff in here.
Please. I'm dying to know.
I love cities. I love people. So I sort of need it. I need to be around people. And like New York City to me right now is – I could retire in New York City. That's how I feel about it. It's weird that I'd ever be saying that. So I'm not sure I could go to Florida, but could go to Nashville. You know what I mean? I could go to Dallas.
Nashville's a great.
Nashville's a great city. My son went to Vanderbilt, so we spent a lot of time. It was fantastic. Right. But I also kind of feel like I want to fight it out in California because there are people starting to fight it back. I mean, this thing's kind of unraveling with the Sanctuary City stuff.
You can always come back.
You're going to get me to leave.
You should leave. I don't know how y'all do it. In fact, the last time when I was on with Corolla a couple weeks ago, I was like flabbergasted by – there are billboards out here with lawyers that are bragging about how much money – I've brought in $500 million for my clients, and it was only in these poor Hispanic neighborhoods I was driving through.
Yes.
And I went, as a marketer, I'm like, they are marketing to the low. I mean, they are like preying on people here.
Yes, the lottery, the check cashing. Right. There's all this and nothing in government to help it out.
Right. Well, you do have a mayor who's to Iowa, and he's telling everybody that L.A. is the
– Fail.
Is the model
F
of the
minus,
country.
F minus. Sanitation at dangerous levels because of the encampments everywhere.
Right.
People languishing and suffering in the streets. Roads suitable for horses. Traffic patterns that non-functional. That's why I want to get in the air just to tell the fuck off. I'm just going, fuck it. I'm going in the air. I don't trust y'all to do anything with our roads ever. I'm going up. I'm going to the sky. So as soon as one's available, just as an FU to our city government, Los Angeles, I'll take it. I don't care what it costs.
If you went to Nashville, it's like everybody's nice.
I know.
Could you imagine going to a place where people are nice?
No.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I know. That whole corridor from like Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, south. It's just really the nicest people.
Yeah. You did a lot of time in Panama City back in the day, didn't you?
Yeah, Adam and I used to go. When we were on MTV, used to go out there once a year, I think we did it. And that was insane. Christmas.
It's not like that anymore.
Spring break. Do they still do that down there?
It's very restricted. It's not like it was when you were down there. You can't drink on the beach anymore down there during spring break.
That was crazy. But I really, Philip, your story intrigued me with the achalasia story. I'm fascinated by that still. I hope you'll keep in touch with me and let me know how this things work out.
Oh, thank you. I will.
And I hope you can
– I'd love your input from time to time.
I love it. If things don't make sense, I'm good at making sense of what the doctors tell you.
Of course.
So I'll be happy to sort of translate stuff for you. But I also think that there's a piece of what you're doing that you need to look at as service, allowing them to experiment with your stuff. Mm-hmm. You may drive some benefit, but it's also service to people with all kinds of conditions. Mm-hmm. You're thinking just about achalasia, but they're thinking about, what can we do with stem cells and we grow them and what do they do and will they innervate and will new nerve cells grow? And there's a million – I mean – see, when you think about innovation in medicine, I think you're thinking about stuff like you're getting involved with. When I think about it, I think about just the operation of the medical system.
Mm-hmm. The bureaucracy, the blob.
It's a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a catastrophe, both in terms of how the insurance system works and how the hospitals work and how doctors are required to function. It's just bad. And so somebody – I have great faith that Buffett and Bezos and who was that? Was it also – what's the name from Microsoft? Was that the three that they're going to try to innovate?
Oh, my God.
It was three pretty very powerful.
Offline, I'll tell you about Bezos is doing. It's insane.
In medicine?
Oh.
And you can't talk about it yet?
No, I can.
Well, tell me.
Oh, okay.
Tell me. I think those are the guys that are going
to
change.
We were just at a conference.
And they're going to have to step completely outside of the system and bring something
in. I think there's like 100 – he's got $150 million in one of these medical startups. And they've basically – and again, there were like five CEOs of medical startups there. Yeah. So I may be getting some of these confused. One of the startups got up there and said they really believe they've isolated the cancer gene or the age gene. And then they can go in and identify how to delay aging.
Mm.
And all of this stuff. I mean, this is with hundreds of millions of dollars behind it. This is not.
No, I know, but they don't. Oh.
But what they don't, what they all admitted to.
They don't understand where they fit.
But what they all admitted to was that they think they will be able to extend the life expectancy for every human. Like for me, it'd be to 90.
Mm-hmm.
If I make it that far, right?
Sure.
But that they don't have, there's nothing really out there on working on brain health. And that's the big problem.
Yeah,
is that they think they can extend life, but we have an issue right now on the dementia and the Alzheimer's and brain health.
And it may have something to do with all this diet stuff we're talking about.
I 100% believe that. Just as I believe that cancers and everything are more diet-related than genetic-related. But I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying this is what I've...
You know, when they start talking about, you know, the telomere, you know, length and all that kind of stuff, they just don't understand the world they're getting into. The genetics and biology is so infinitely complex. It's infinitely complex. Mm-hmm. That when you push the probability equation one direction, there's an infinite number of consequences mm-hmm. that are unanticipated and difficult to track. And I mean, just they need to get deeper in – if they're going to look at aging, they got to get much deeper in the cancer world and the genomics there because – and the understanding of the genetics and the proteomics and stuff because – there is where they've discovered when they find a pathway and they do something to it, the cancer responds in 1,000 different ways that they're unanticipated. Things that should work don't work all the time, like routinely, like 90% of the time.
Right.
But every time we do that, we learn something about how the biology operates. It's way more complicated than $150 million, I'm sorry to say. I wish they would focus on helping the system operate that we have. Because we could get everybody to 100 just with the proper
but
system.
That's not fun.
I know.
Right?
I understand. And I would just point at Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And say, that's hubris, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Do not be hubristic with biology. Don't do it. Don't do it. That's hubris. It's way more complicated than you understand. Let's focus on fixing the system. That's my thing. Anyway, really a pleasure to talk to you. I hope we'll keep the conversation going. I'm anxious to hear more. I'm going to send you – maybe I'll send you a audit.
Yeah, do the audit.
I'll have my wife do it because she's very interested in the podcasting and all this stuff and wants to build it. And so
you'll learn something.
I'm sure of it. And she'll probably apply whatever you tell her to do.
Yeah.
So anything from your – anything else you want people to know about the book or you or –
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to help and tell the story, and hopefully that helps somebody else. Look, rare diseases don't get any money, and so you either disrupt or you'll be disrupted.
Yeah,
and that's well, there's
a lot
this.
To your story, and disease is one component.
Right.
So I just wanted to tell your whole story, and I think people will respond to it. So
thank you.
I think it will enhance other people's experience. So thank you so much.
I'm grateful,
and we'll see you all next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.